they're doing the bare minimum of what they think they can get away with without being sued.
Western Villages file suit against the state over voting interpreters. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, July 22nd. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, a former Juneau police officer is sentenced for a shooting spree last year.
Depending on your point of view, it was either dumb luck or the grace of God that nobody was hit or killed.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Native villages in western Alaska are suing the state over voting practices. They contend the language interpreter services are inadequate and violate the Voting Rights Act. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, the case follows a similar suit from 2007 in Bethel.
By law, the state needs to provide certain regions of Alaska with interpreters at polling stations. A 2010 decision ruled that a woman in Bethel had her voting rights violated because she was not provided with sufficient Yupik interpretation services. James Tucker is of counsel with Wilson Elser. He litigated the earlier suit and brought the new case in Anchorage Friday.
All of the things that the state said that it was going to do in the Bethel region and would apply statewide to all Yupik voters, they just simply haven't done it.
The new case takes place in two regions adjoining Bethel, the Wade Hampton and Dillingham census areas. Tucker says many of the interpreters at polling stations don't understand what they're supposed to do, and oftentimes they're incapable of translating legal jargon, such as ballot initiatives, into local languages.
What we're actually seeing and what really led to this lawsuit isn't that they're doing the bare minimum of what's required by the law, because they're not. They're doing the bare minimum of what they think they can get away with without being sued.
Lieutenant Governor Meade Treadwell is listed as a defendant. So is Division of Elections Director Gail Finumiai. She declined to comment because she says the state has yet to see the lawsuit. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
No one was hurt or killed when a former Juneau police officer and SWAT commander barricaded himself inside his house and shot as many as 75 rounds at other officers during Easter weekend last year. The attempted murder charges filed against Troy Wilson were eventually dropped as part of a plea agreement with prosecutors. KTOO's Matt Miller reports on the final day of Wilson's sentencing hearing.
Former Juneau Police Lieutenant Troy Wilson was sentenced in Juneau Superior Court on Friday to 25 years in prison with 16 years suspended, or 9 years to serve. Wilson had pled guilty to multiple charges of assault, misconduct involving weapons, and criminal mischief in connection with an incident on Easter weekend last year in Juneau. Wilson was intoxicated and suicidal and fired at several of his former colleagues from his residence. Wilson surrendered after a four-hour standoff. At the start of the 45-minute continuation of Wilson's sentencing hearing on Friday, Superior Court Judge Philip Pallenberg compared the case to Juneau and Hoonah police officers who were gunned down by mentally disturbed individuals. Pallenberg was not convinced that Wilson intentionally missed his targets.
Depending on your point of view, it was either dumb luck or the grace of God that nobody was hit or killed. What would have happened if somebody had been hit or killed, one of those officers was killed?
Judge Pallenberg is sure that prosecutors would have sought first-degree murder charges that would carry a mandatory 99-year sentence for killing a police officer. In this instance, prosecutors wanted Wilson to serve 20 years in prison. Judge Pallenberg considered the Thursday testimony of a psychiatrist, Wilson's wife, and Wilson as they described his alcoholism and depression.
There are factors that bode well for Mr. Wilson's rehabilitation. He has a long and, at least until the end, stable work history. He has a long and, until the end, stable marriage. He has a huge number of people who believe in him, who think that he can be successful, people who know him well.
Pallenberg acknowledged that some, including those Juneau police officers who were fired upon last year, may not be satisfied with that sentence. But the judge said he was bound by the law's presumptive and maximum ranges for each crime, and he expressed concerns that any prison time exceeding 10 years could be successfully challenged at the Alaska Court of Appeals. Wilson was also sentenced to 10 years probation, and he was prohibited from consuming alcohol or prescription drugs without the permission of his probation officer. Judge Pallenberg also ordered him to wear a device that monitors his consumption of alcohol, even though such devices are not currently or readily available in the Juneau area. He was also ordered to undergo any recommended substance abuse treatment and must undergo a psychiatric, psychological, or mental health evaluation and participate in any counseling or treatment. Since he's a former cop, Wilson remains segregated at Lemon Creek Correctional Center, effectively solitary confinement for 23 hours a day. But then he does not have the access to those programs that are normally available to the general population. Pallenberg says he hopes that the Department of Corrections comes up with an alternative arrangement. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
A 78-foot vessel used to move sockeye salmon from the fishing grounds to a processing facility is still leaking fuel into a salmon-producing river in Bristol Bay. KDLG's Mike Mason has this update.
The sunken fishing tender Lone Star is sitting on its side in the mouth of the Agushik River. The vessel sank in late June with thousands of gallons of fuel on board. What has not leaked out is likely still on board, as responders are preparing the vessel for a lightering effort that should finally get underway this week. John Brown is an environmental program specialist with the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation.
It's a very dangerous operating environment, and these guys have been on it for quite a while. So, we're finding the process, we're moving ahead, and I think we're getting close to getting the fuel off.
The responders are still trying to gain access to all of the fuel tanks on the Lone Star. They do that by drilling through the hull of the vessel and putting in a valve. It's anticipated that the hot tapping, as it's called, will be completed in time for lightering to begin sometime later this week. Among the agencies on scene is the U.S. Coast Guard. Petty Officer Sean Eggert is a spokesman for the Coast Guard Sector Anchorage.
Members of the Coast Guard and the Coast Guard National Strike Team, the Pacific Strike Team, are on scene just kind of offering their advice and consultation to aid in the recovery of the vessel.
At last report, the Lone Star was carrying over 13,000 gallons of diesel fuel, along with significant quantities of hydraulic fluid, lube oil, and gasoline. The vessel is also carrying about 30,000 pounds of sockeye salmon that were on board when it sank on the 30th of June. Once the fuel is lightered off the Lone Star, the next step is to recover the vessel from its resting spot. A draft recovery plan was put forward for review on Friday, and it's currently being reviewed by the U.S. Coast Guard and state agencies. The 78-foot Lone Star has been leaking fuel into the pristine Agushik River since it sank during the early morning hours of June 30th. The leaking fuel forced the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to shut down the commercial set net fishery in the Agushik section. Fish and Game also instituted a 6-mile closure for the drifters around the mouth of the Agushik River. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Alaska Natural Resources Commissioner Dan Sullivan is on his way to Afghanistan. Sullivan was recalled to active duty with the U.S. military, according to DNR spokesperson Elizabeth Blumink. His deployment began on Sunday. Sullivan will be on leave from his state duties for 6 weeks. During that time, Deputy DNR Commissioner Joe Balash will act in Sullivan's place. Sullivan has served the state as DNR Commissioner for the past 3 years. According to his military bio, he currently serves as the executive officer of the 4th Marine Division's Anti-Terrorism Battalion, described as the largest battalion in the Marine Corps Reserve. Sullivan has previously been recalled to duty from December 2004 to April 2006 and in early 2009. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a program that encourages food stamp recipients to buy at the farmers market in Bethel.
They should come out and take a look and bring their Quest card and double their money. It's better than the slot machines.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska Nanook Commission reminds you that harassing polar bears or taking polar bears with cubs is not only illegal, but it is not part of native traditions. Together with their management partners at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Alaska Nanook Commission has been working on developing a long-term polar bear deterrence plan to protect Alaska's villages from dangerous polar bear encounters. More at thealaskanannookcommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission, Alaska's people managing Alaska's resources.
Governor Sean Parnell is reassuring Fairbanks area residents that the state is working toward trucking North Slope gas to the interior, where residents are currently limited to oil and wood for heat. The legislature approved an over $300 million financing package this spring, and a number of companies have expressed interest in participating. Governor Parnell emphasized the state's commitment in an address to the Fairbanks Rotary Club last week.
We cannot yet take a victory lap that interior residents have cheaper gas, but we are well on our way. And make no mistake, this is no longer an interior energy plan. This is an interior energy project.
Parnell said the state's target for delivering first gas to Fairbanks is by the fourth quarter of 2015. The Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority is handling financial aspects of the project, while the Alaska Energy Authority reviews private sector partner proposals to handle gas processing, transportation, and local distribution. Parnell assured the review process is well underway.
The combined team at ADA and AEA are advancing components of a business partnership with possible equity partners to construct the LNG production plant. And although it may not be apparent on the surface, ADA and AEA negotiations are underway with potential equity partners, and we believe we are on the road to a successful business collaboration.
Local private utility Fairbanks Natural Gas, which currently trucks in Cook Inlet gas to serve about 1,000 local customers, wants to make use of state support to take on the entire North Slope to Fairbanks project. FNG and the Fairbanks North Star Borough Interior Natural Gas Utility have both applied to serve North Pole, a conflict Parnell says the state is working to resolve.
The Regulatory Commission of Alaska is currently considering how to best serve the expanded territory outside the Fairbanks natural gas boundaries. In fact, RCA is scheduled to hold a public hearing here on July 30th, and I would urge you all to participate in that public hearing. Go learn where things stand, and then make your voice known as well.
Parnell says the state is working to nail down more precise project costs. The Bethel Farmers Market is accepting food stamps and offering a program that allows customers to double down their purchases. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Kyle Clayton reports.
Tim Myers sells organic and locally grown produce from his farmers market near Tundra Ridge. He sells peaches, apples, plums,
and cherries and carrots and strawberries. We've got everything.
And now any Quest card-carrying resident can purchase produce at Myers' farm. And because of a new state-run program, every $20 a person spends, they can get an additional $20 worth of food.
They should come out and take a look and bring their Quest card and double their money. It's better than the slot machines.
The Alaska Department of Health and Social Services is funding 11 farmers markets across the state.
But in Bethel, that money is actually coming from YKHC.
That's Diane Peake. She's a nutritionist who works with the Obesity and Control Program at the Department of Health.
We know that there are low-income Alaskans who are on Quest who would like access to healthier foods that you can find at farmers markets. And so that's the goal of the program, is to increase access and availability and affordability of healthy local foods.
The Yukon Kuskokwim Health Corporation Diabetes Department provided $2,000 to Myers' market, and the deal will last until the money runs out. Myers says it doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime soon.
There's been about 8 or 10 people so far. It's kind of surprising. It's a pretty good deal. I mean, the price of the produce here is very competitive with the other stores, and for the first $20, it's half price.
Each time they come?
Each time they come.
Myers says even after the funds run out, he will continue to accept Quest cards. In Bethel, I'm Kyle Clayton.
Southeast Alaska's new redistricting boundaries eliminate the possibility of at least one House election rematch, but they could lead to some other challenges. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The House district plan created for last year's elections put Haines and Sitka together for the first time. That led to a very close race between incumbent Representative Bill Thomas, a Haines Republican, and challenger Jonathan Christ-Tompkins, a Sitka Democrat. Christ-Tompkins won by 32 votes, less than half a percent. so many expected Thomas to file for a rematch.
I get asked the same question 5 to 10 times a day. Are you going to run again?
But that redistricting plan was overturned by the courts, and the new one for 2014's election puts Thomas in the same district as Representative Beth Curtula, a Juneau Democrat.
Being downtown Juneau and coming from Ames, I don't think I could possibly win in that district. So I would, if I were to run, and the big word is if I were to run, I would have to seriously consider running for the Senate seat. And that's if Senator Egan would have stepped down.
Thomas is interested because the Senate seat includes the downtown Juneau and Haines district, plus Juneau's Republican majority Mendenhall Valley House district. That said, the incumbent in that Senate district, Juneau Democrat Dennis Egan, expects to run next year.
Yeah, I think so. At least one more term. If I get 4 more years, it'll be fine. I'm going to try hard.
Egan, a former Juneau mayor, says he's mostly okay with the new election boundaries because they make districts more compact. But Curtula, the incumbent in the downtown Haines-Skagway district, says it's odd because it leaves Juneau's Mendenhall Valley district as an enclave.
I think that they kind of tortured it a bit to move downtown Juneau and Douglas all the way around the rest of the area to come in, and that looks political to me. But having said that, again, my focus is just going to be more on, you know, doing a good job, representing people well, and campaigning hard.
So she'll run again next year with Haines in her district. Also on the ballot will be Juneau's Mendenhall Valley representative. Republican Kathy Munoz is glad her district remains compact rather than being paired with communities to the north.
That is, you know, one contiguous area that's represented by a high school and middle schools and elementary schools right in that compact neighborhood area. And so to separate or to carve out a portion of the Mendenhall Valley, I think, would have been problematic.
Further south, Petersburg gets its wish under the new boundaries, separating from the downtown Juneau House District and joining Sitka and numerous villages. Kreis Tompkins, the Sitka Democratic representative, says the changes are fine with him.
It's all southeast Alaska, and as long as it doesn't include parts of Anchorage or the Matsu, I'm pretty happy. I like all of southeast.
So sounds like you're definitely planning on running again.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll definitely be in there.
Even without Haines's Thomas in the district, some speculate Kreis Tompkins could be vulnerable in the next election. But so far, no one has made a point of announcing plans to run against him. Others have wondered about Wrangell Republican Peggy Wilson, who used to also represent Sitka and Petersburg. The 2002 redistricting effort shifted her into an area dominated by Ketchikan. It's pretty much the same for 2014, and there's talk of a serious contender from the larger city. Wilson couldn't be reached for immediate comment, but in a recent interview, she said she'd run again, whomever she represents.
You get pulled one way, and then you might get pulled another way, and I have found out that I can live with whatever they dish out, so that's the way it is, I guess.
I think the plan that they put forward this time is more reasonable and fair to the public than the previous plan.
Sitka Republican Senator Bert Stedman represents the same communities as Wilson and Kreis Tompkins. And like them, his district has undergone some changes, such as losing Haines and gaining Petersburg. He points to Southeast's loss of 2 of its 8 legislative seats in the last and this year's redistricting changes, so he's less worried about exact boundaries and more concerned about the increasing legislative dominance of Anchorage and other cities in the Rail Belt.
It doesn't make a whole lot of difference if you're in Metlakatla, or you're in Sitka, or you're in Cake, or you're in Petersburg or Wrangell. You're all in rural Alaska, and we're all together. And we just need to make sure we're all paddling in the same direction so we don't get left behind.
The latest redistricting plan was released July 14th, and, like its predecessor, it could face legal challenges. If it stands, its boundaries won't take effect until after the 2014 elections. That means lawmakers will continue serving their current districts through next year's legislative meetings. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
One of the world's biggest and most environmentally friendly cod longliners has begun its journey to Alaska. The 180-foot Northern Leader has left the shipyard, and after 2 weeks of work in Seattle, it should be fishing for cod in the Bering Sea in about a month. KDLG's Ben Matheson has the story.
The Northern Leader has connections to Bristol Bay. It's owned by Alaskan Leader Fisheries, of which BBEDC is a 50% owner. The new $30 million vessel is the largest freezer longliner built in the U.S. and is the biggest ever in terms of fish hold and freezing capacity. It features some eco-friendly technology that's new to the fishing fleet. It's the first fishing vessel in the country to use a hybrid diesel-electric propulsion system.
When we lose the docks, we're running out with using fuel, and then when we get out in the fishing grounds, we'll switch over to electricity. And the savings of these engines, the way they're combined, they'll probably save close to $500,000 in today's fuel price, which makes the boat very competitive.
Robin Samuelson is board chair of BBEDC. The advanced propulsion system does not require any transmission, according to Nick Delaney, the managing director and vice chairman for Alaskan Leader Fisheries.
If you can imagine kind of almost like oversized outboard engines from the shaft down to the propeller that can turn 360 degrees, and powering those are electric motors that sit on top of them. So there's no shaft, there's no transmission, there's none of that stuff, because basically you can go full forward to full reverse without going in and out of gear. There's no transmission. You don't need it because you just turn the position of the propeller unit.
Freezers can hold 1.8 million pounds of fish. The line's 76,000 hooks will be automatically baited with technology from Norway. The vessel can harvest up to 62 million pounds of fish per year. It will target Alaskan cod, sablefish, and other groundfish species. The Northern Leader is the first longliner in the Bering Sea to take a nearly full harvest of the fish. By utilizing cod heads, they can use 85 to 95% of the fish instead of the standard 50 to 55%.
They get dried here in Pacific Northwest or in eastern Canada, and then they get shipped to markets in Nigeria and Ghana, and it represents a tremendous amount of the fish ends up back in the Bering Sea the way it is now, but there is definitely economic value.
In addition to the energy savings and maximum yield of each fish, Delaney highlights the environmental advantages of longlining that are less intrusive than trawl operations.
Baited hooks have a tendency to catch the targeted species that you're fishing for, so there's not a lot of bycatch.
Alaskan Leader Fisheries signed the contract with Martinek Shipyard in Tacoma in December of 2011. Construction began in March of 2012 and continued through June of this year. It should be fishing by about August 15th, beginning with Alaskan cod. Robin Samuelson says it's a big investment, but it should make money in the Bering Sea.
Cod prices are down right now, and we're still looking at, for this vessel to be turning a profit and bringing them dollars back into the region.
A christening is scheduled for July 31st. They hope to have the governors of Washington and Alaska in attendance, as well as some local participation. In Dillingham, I'm Ben Matheson.
Endurance road bikers will be riding through South Central and Interior Alaska as part of the 90-hour, 1,200-kilometer Big Wild Ride. The race began at 11:59 last night. KTNA's Philip Manning has the story.
Unlike the world's best-known cycling event, the Tour de France, the Big Wild Ride is not a race. It's an unsupported endurance challenge called a randonnée, a French word meaning rambling journey. Kevin Turinsky is the founder of Alaska Randonneurs, the group that organizes the event.
They'll be departing the shores of Prince William Sound from Valdez on a 1,200-kilometer journey that's about 750 miles from Valdez up through Fairbanks and down into Anchorage. The finish is at Ship Creek, We've set up three overnight checkpoints. We call them controls, one in Delta Junction, one in Healy, and one in Talkeetna. So if riders do want to catch a few hours of sleep, a few winks, if they have some repairs they need to do on their bike, we've set that up.
Cyclists will have less than 4 days to complete the daunting course. Since it began in 2011, Terinsky says the Big Wild Ride has drawn participants from around the world.
We have riders from Canada, all across the United States, from Japan, from Germany, New Zealand, and in the past we've had riders from South Korea, Sweden, Denmark, the Netherlands, the UK. So it's a very international group of people coming up to ride this.
All but one of the cyclists are from outside of Alaska and will be briefed regarding wildlife such as moose, bear, and caribou. Terinsky has been fielding questions from riders who are concerned about attacks from a much smaller animal, however.
There's a lot of nervousness, a lot of anxiety at this point with the riders. I'm getting emails every day asking specifically what kind of mosquito repellent they need to use. I think they're more in fear of our canary-sized bugs rather than the moose and bear.
While the Big Wild Ride is the longest and most challenging of Alaska Randonneur's events, it is far from the only one they put on.
We put on about anywhere from 20 to 25 rides each summer all across the state, from as far south as Homer, as far north as Delta Junction, the Denali Highway, Talkeetna. Our rides are typically 100 to 600 kilometers in length. They are all timed events, you know, so they can be very challenging. They're extraordinarily scenic and interesting courses. They're a lot of fun to ride.
The Big Wild Ride lasts through Thursday, when the 50 cyclists will have until 6:49 p.m. to reach the finish line in Anchorage after covering over 750 miles of Alaska highways. In order to finish, Terinsky says that riders will need determination, self-sufficiency, and camaraderie. In Talkeetna, I'm Philip Manning.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. You can find our stories online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Matt Miller and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Mike Mason and Ben Matheson in Dillingham, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Kyle Clayton in Bethel, Philip Manning in Talkeetna. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Zanny Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Crowley. Celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. And by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. Didn't quite catch that report. Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at alaskapublic.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.